gang. It's our Thanksgiving show. Welcome to Channel Q on November 22nd, 2019. We have a Thanksgiving show. We got a great lineup today. We're going to start the show off with Daryl Cummings, who's the Chief Operating Officer of the Los Angeles LGBT Center, talking about homelessness in the LGBT community. And then after Daryl, Sandy Sachs is calling in from New Orleans. Sandy was the founder of Girl Bar 30 years ago, brought to life the whole notion about lipstick lesbians. And there was even a television show created about her and her partner, Robin Gans, called The L Word. You may have heard of it, that kind of highlighted this alternative lifestyle for lesbians that was a little different than other narratives about what lesbianism meant. And then we're going to conclude the show by having two of the reverends from the MCC churches on, Reverend Lucha Chappelle and Keith Mozingo, are coming in studio to talk about what we as LGBT people have to be grateful for this Thanksgiving time in the height of Trumpism, because sometimes it looks like we got nothing. But we do, right, Jay?
Of course we do. Wait, is my mic working this week?
Yeah, oh, my God.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay, so they must have fixed it, because last week I had it unplugged.
Yeah. Last week was weird. Like, this mic just wasn't working. So I had to play sound effects to get through it.
Yeah, and you did. Inappropriately, I might add. Gang, we're joined by Daryl Cummings, who is the Chief Operating Officer from the center. Daryl, welcome to Sidebar.
Good job. Thank you. Thank you, guys. It's great to be here.
Good to have you here. Yeah. I know that in West Hollywood, we see a lot of our community out on the streets, trans women of color, I mean, trans immigrants, young gay men who appear to be drug addicts, and they're all living on the streets. It breaks my heart. It's like, yeah, what do we do?
It is absolutely heartbreaking, but it's not entirely surprising.
Right.
You know, our community is disproportionately poor, despite what the common thinking is.
Well, we're not all rich
that.
Gay white males?
We're not. We're really not. And let me just give you a couple of data points to start this conversation. Even though there's very little data on our community anywhere, one of the things that we do know is that based on studies, that somewhere between 20 and 30% of young people in foster care self-identify as LGBTQ. Now, that's a highly disproportional rate.
Yeah.
And then if you bump forward a few years, we know that 40% of young people ages 18 to 25 self-identify, that are homeless, self-identify as LGBTQ. So it's not, you know, we've had some of this data for a while now, so it's not entirely surprising that across the board this is true. And, you know, that we're seeing it more now on sidewalks and in neighborhoods, in large part because people have been flushed out of places that they used to squat on Hollywood Boulevard downtown, that are now, you know, expensive condos and businesses.
Right.
And so, you know, L.A. is an incredibly expensive place to live, as are many places. So homelessness in our community is a real problem and highly disproportionate, in my view.
So I know that historically the myth or the story, I think maybe it's actually more of a story than a myth, is that LGBT people would be kicked out of their homes because of religious convictions of family members, or they were being brutally beaten or treated violently, and they would run away and end up in the big cities, San Francisco, New York, Los Angeles. Does that still happen in 2019?
It still happens all the time, surprisingly, shockingly.
Yeah,
given
that is shocking.
What we think the gains are that we have made. And it's not just people coming from, you know, small towns in southern states. It's people coming right from L.A. This is happening right here in Los Angeles, throughout California. So we still have a lot of work to do to protect young people who really need it, and protection from their own families,
right,
for God's sake.
And they come to Hollywood, West Hollywood, because somewhere in their head, they have heard of Hollywood, West Hollywood, the Castro, maybe the Village in New York, and they figure that's where I got to go.
People arrive and the word on the street is really strong. Mm-hmm. Where can I go where I'm going to be safe? Where can I go that I can sleep? Where can I get a meal? And so, you know, young people in particular that are homeless find each other very quickly. And then find out where they can go for any kind of services or help or safety.
The other segment of this that I think is obvious to many of us as we're walking around, because I live in West Hollywood and I'm not blind. I'm actually an elected official that's charged with doing something about this. But I see young, mostly gay men muttering to themselves, you know, psychotic. And I think to myself, crystal meth, mental illness, both.
Whoa. Yep. We see this all the time. in every age group, but it's particularly stark with young people. But you think about it, if you're sleeping in a park, one of the things you want to do is protect your belongings and protect yourself. One of the things that Crystal does is keep people awake. And so they can be awake all night. That has all kinds of, over time, as you know, side effects, ramifications for them. And, you know, if you think about what, I mean, if you're 15 years old and you get kicked out of your home by your parents and you get rejected by a religious leader and at school, you know, this takes a real toll on your mental health. And so the combination of mental health issues and substance use and all kinds of other things live within the population that we're talking about. And probably even anecdotally, you've seen that, you know, this is disproportionately LGBT people of color. So there's a combination. This is where intersectionality lives within young people who are homeless or in the foster care system or incarcerated.
When we come back, we'll be talking to Daryl Cummings more about what the center is doing about all this. Thanks for tuning in here on Channel Q.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Another Day in Paradise by the incredible Phil Collins. We're talking to Daryl Cummings in the Los Angeles LGBT Center about homelessness in our community. And we were talking about the different demographics earlier, Daryl. But now, what is the center and your supporters? What are you doing about it?
Well, we've been doing quite a bit, even though it's clear that we're not meeting the needs. So, for example, in our new facility called The Campus, we have now more than 40 beds, emergency overnight beds for homeless youth, another 54 units for that where a young person could stay up to 18 months. And we're building 24 apartments for those young people. And we do things like collaborate with West Hollywood on a variety of housing institutions in that city where we can place young people, people living with HIV or have mental illness that are also homeless. We have a facility called Triangle Square, which is affordable housing for LGBTQ seniors. It's 104 units. And by the way, it maintains a 500-person waiting list at all times.
Wow.
We're building another 95 units at the campus. We anticipate applications for those apartments will number in the thousands. So there's another point that, you know, another data point, even though it's a little bit anecdotal, about how great the need is. These are people that are currently homeless. They're living in their car, or they're very home insecure, and they, you know, they're about to lose their apartments where they've lived with their partners. And so, you know, we also, through our healthcare operations, work with both people living with HIV and other primary care. People are there for our primary care services who are without homes to work throughout the county to find them places to live. But as you know, it's very difficult to do that.
Yeah.
So we're also able to, we have 75 scattered site apartments for homeless youth as well.
Right.
That we can help them with rent.
Well, the solution is, if it's homeless, is to build homes.
yeah, that's a big, I mean, if you don't have a place to stay, everything else becomes kind of irrelevant. So as, you know, we were talking, homeless people often are dealing with a whole variety of issues. It might be substance abuse, just generic poverty and mental health issues and all kinds of other things. And in our community, you know, oftentimes we're single more often So there's not dual income. We don't have families that we can count on. So it becomes even more difficult. So, you know, a whole human being has to be addressed. Housing is like step A. People need to be secure on where they're going to sleep at night in order to think about other things.
I'm wondering if there's a disproportionate impact on transgender women and transgender men, because often with that segment of our community, there's issues of employability. When there's issues of employability, then there's issues about housing and ability to survive.
There's no question. I mean, trans people of color in particular are facing enormous odds, and you know, employment is a really key issue. We just had a transgender job fair, we had lines out the facility for people waiting to get in. So it was maybe 1,000 trans men and women seeking employment, and then a host of very mainstream companies wanting to employ them. So we're seeing that some of that change, but there's a lot to do with both people seeking jobs and employers to make these matches work.
Mm. What about churches and clergy? Any support? Is it our LGBT churches and clergy that work with us, or are there mainstream churches willing to get in there with our community?
Well, there's both LGBT specific and there's mainstream religious institutions that are friendly and supportive. So from a spiritual standpoint, there's places for people to go. And there's good work that people do in terms of, you know, preparing meals sometimes and all that sort of thing. But by and large, the issues of homelessness and hunger and employment that in my view are in theory the responsibility of our government are left in part or in large part to organizations like ours to address.
So if people are listening around the country and they really care deeply about homelessness, and by the way, I think we all do. We're all impacted no matter where we are. What can people do to get involved? One thing that's obvious to me is when you hear about housing being proposed, go and become a YIMBY. Yes, in my backyard instead of a NIMBY, not in my backyard.
I think that's really important. I mean, here in LA County, and this is true across the country, when governments have taken a step forward to provide shelter or temporary shelter or emergency shelter in neighborhoods across cities, the reaction to that has been in large part negative. And our elected officials and bureaucrats rarely hear from those of us in those neighborhoods that say, yes, we're willing to do this. We want to do this. People deserve to be housed. And at the root of all this, and this is where I think people need to communicate, at the root of all this is the idea that it's okay for a certain number of people in our society to live without homes. Mm. And so those of us who believe that that is not true, and in fact people have an inherent right to shelter and housing and food and all those kinds of things, need to make that known. And we need to show up at housing authorities, and we need to show up at city council meetings when they're dealing with these kinds of things. Because what we're hearing otherwise is the other side, that is both not in my backyard, or they're blaming people who happen to be without homes.
Mm. Are there volunteer opportunities available at the center or other places help out?
There are at the center, and people just visit our website and submit an application for all kinds of volunteer work. But this is true about all other nonprofit organizations. People need volunteers, and we depend on them. So yes, there are many.
So we've got a couple of minutes left, but I have to ask Daryl, because I've known you a very long time.
Long time, Todd.
A very long time.
We're of that age.
You have been at the center now for how long?
Since 1993, with a 4-year break in between, so a number of years.
Wow.
Decades.
So yeah. 25 years.
Yeah.
Looking back at your life's course, has this been what you dreamed it would be? I mean, because talk about making a difference. I watched you. I've watched you over the decades in the places you show up, in the middle of marriage equality, in the middle of gays in the military, in the middle of HIV, in the middle of hate crimes, in the middle of trauma and drama, and there you are.
Yeah.
And obviously making a huge difference for thousands of people.
Yeah, I think about when I first became an activist, you know, and I was mugged twice because of my sexual orientation. You know, the organizations that were around. I mean, I did a little stint at the task force, National LGBTQ Task Force, a long time ago. There were three of us.
Mm.
and HRC was just getting started. You know, like, it was just a different time, and it was very dangerous. We did those whistle campaigns, you know, to let each other know that we needed help. And today, you know, I run a LGBTQ-specific organization with 800 full-time staff.
That's amazing.
Serving, you know, tens of thousands of people every single month and advocating on our rights. I'm married. You know, I've been invited to the White House to meet the president specifically because I'm gay. You know, wow. I mean, if you know, even though we're going through what I think is a very, very dark time for our country right now and our community in particular, I don't ever forget from whence we came and the shoulders in which we stand upon. And, you know, you and I have been around for a long time doing this kind of work. And my guess is that you look at this and similarly to I, that the gains that we've made when we were young, we would never imagine that it would be possible.
Never imagined
it possible. And so it's important to hang on to that historical trend that so many of us have been a part of.
You were a little queer kid in West Virginia.
I was.
And I was a little queer kid in East L.A. Yeah. And I never thought I'd see the front runner for the Democratic nomination in Iowa as an openly gay man.
It's hard to believe. And you know, you can't win an office as a Democrat. You can't even win a primary nomination unless you're supporting our community.
Right.
And it's absolutely remarkable. Yeah. So, you know, I think we'll get through this dark period and we'll, you know, get on a better path and here in the United States, here in California and globally. And, you know, we're a snowball rolling down a hill. We're going to win this damn thing, for everybody.
Hmm. If somebody is tuning in and they are experiencing homelessness or they think they're about to become homeless, where would you have them go to?
If they have access to a computer, they can just go to our website, which is the LALGBTCenter.org, or visit us at any of our sites in Hollywood. We're not hard to find.
Okay. And if you're in New York or Chicago or Miami, look for the center nearest you.
There's hundreds of centers now throughout the country, and they're all there to help people. And even if they don't provide housing and other kinds of services, they know where that you can find them. Okay. So look for your local centers, and they'll be of tremendous help to you.
Wonderful. Darrell Cummings, you're one of my heroes, man. Chief Operating Officer of the Los Angeles LGBT Center, longtime activist, 30 years? 30 plus years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, hard to believe.
Yeah. Right back at you, John.
I know. Boomer. Okay, Boomer.
Yeah.
Okay, Boomer. Yeah. I'm going to take that as a badge of pride now. Gang, when we come back, we'll be talking to Sandy Sachs, the founder of Girl Bar 30 years ago, Lipstick Lesbianism, here on Channel Q.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right, closer, taking in Sarah. Gang, we are live now on the line with us, calling in from the Big Easy, New Orleans, one of my favorite towns in America, the incredible Sandy Sachs. Hey, Sandy, welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Oh, so good to have you here. We were talking, you and I, offline, but now we need to bring it online. Girl Bar started when? What year?
Technically, it started in 1989 at the back bar of Revolver, if you remember the original Revolver.
Yes, the original.
In West Hollywood, the original, where I was actually managing with Robin. And we started to do girl bar in the back bar. Like, you know, we used to let the girls in and come in, and it was a small, tiny bar, if you remember.
That little tequila bar almost there,
yes,
at the backside of the Revolver.
Right, the tequila bar. And we said, you know, hey, let's do some girls, and why not? There's nothing really happening. And we'd cram in everybody there. And then we said, you know, this is just crazy, because we used to do Thursday nights, and it was so busy that we moved it to take over the whole bar on a Wednesday night. Well, you know, we were doing that for about a year, less than a year, when Scott Forbes, of course, of the famed Studio One, came over to Revolver and said, you know, wow, this is really incredible. And coming from him, we thought that was great, because we'd always heard how much he really disliked women. So here he was saying, came over to us and he said, why don't you come over and do this at my place? And we were like, whoa, unbelievable. So we actually did. We moved Girl Bar from Revolver over to the back lot of Studio One in November of 1990.
And so, you know, I mean, a lot of people in Southern California are familiar with the story of Sandy Sachs and Dr. Robin Ganz, but for people around the country, they may not be. You were pretty radical at the time, because I think you two were the first two official lipstick lesbians.
We actually were,
yeah.
Believe it or not.
Yeah,
There was a writer for the LA Times that I believe it was like 91 or 92, actually coined the phrase lipstick lesbian, because, you know, she
lesbian!
Came and she came and she saw, you know, she came to the back lot and saw what we were doing, and we had go-go dancers, which, by the way, we were picketed for by our own community, saying that we were objectifying women, and you know, which we really didn't feel we were. You know, we just gave it, you know, they were scantily clad, but nothing nude, and we hired real dancers, and it was just, you know, it was just eye candy and energy. So she came in and did an interview and coined the phrase. Her name was Lindsay Van Gelder. Look her up. She used to write for the LA Times. And from that article started a barrage of talk shows, because, you know, all of a sudden now this lipstick lesbian, what is that kind of thing, started out of this article. And Robin and I ended up doing like six talk shows, six or seven or eight. I mean, I lost count, to be honest with you. It was insane.
Yeah. And you were all presenting an alternative presentation of what lesbianism was. Not to say that the masculine Butch Dyke was bad or didn't exist.
Right, but that was the stereotype.
That was the stereotype, right.
Right. And we just sort of broke the stereotype, which was what, you know, people were like, wow, what's going on here? So I think that's why it piqued interest.
Yeah. You know, I think the comparison for gay men is the Tom of Finland presentation, because prior to that, the whole stereotype was effeminate gay man, effeminate, lisping,
right.
With a boa,
right.
Colorful paisley
Limpy,
shirt,
limp-wristed.
Not to say that
right.
Wasn't true. That was true. But there were alternative presentations, the hyper-masculine, muscular, and all of a sudden we were able to expand what the meaning of, you know, gay male looked like. And I think that Girl Bar did the exact same thing for women.
We did. You know, we just sort of, we opened up a different door to let people know that, you know, that lesbians come in all, you know, forms and shapes and sizes, not just the one that they have a picture of.
Right. I forgot about the picketers, but when you said it, I remembered.
Gosh,
then
yeah.
I remembered because there were, I remember women in our community who said that any objectification of the body was, and men, there were some men too, but I mean, primarily women, that, you know, porn was bad and that go-go dancers, bad. And meanwhile,
right.
I mean,
sexual we were just doing what the crowd wanted. I mean, clearly, if our crowd, if the women, were objecting to it, you know, clearly we would have stopped doing it, but they loved it. And we became famous for our go-go dances.
I love that.
I mean, to the point where, I mean, you know, we became the spot where like Madonna and Janet Jackson and everybody would come to get their dancers, and then they'd end up stealing them. So, you know, Madonna came in twice, you know, and took a couple of our dancers and took them on the road.
I love that.
We were proud of the fact that, you know, we actually had, you know, trained dancers, and they were just there to sort of, you know, as I said earlier, add a little eye candy and more than anything, just sort of energy. You know, they added sort of energy to the room.
Gang, when we come back, we'll be talking more to Sandy Sachs, calling in from New Orleans about lipstick lesbians here on Channel Q.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Incredible Tracy Chapman, Fast Car. Another lesbian, maybe not a lipstick lesbian, but another lesbian. Sandy, you're still there with us?
But see, that's the thing. We come in all forms.
Yeah, exactly. That was the whole point. I mean, people forget, 89, when you started this, it was 20 years after Stonewall. Stonewall had happened in 69. 79, you know, we were at the height of Studio One, and then HIV and AIDS hit everywhere in the 80s. And then out of all that, I think that was the next step for the community was continuing to unfold itself and break down stereotypes and myths about our people.
Can you imagine that it was only 20 years after Stonewall, and now we're looking, I mean, next year in November in 2020 will be Girl Bar's 30th anniversary.
Unbelievable. And it'll be 50.
Yeah, I think
50.
We might hang up our dancing shoes after that one and leave it to the younger crowd.
You know, Sandy, I was telling listeners earlier, I went to the Studio One farewell, and I was out on the dance floor dancing to disco, and I looked across the room, and here's all these gray-haired men with wrinkled eyes and wrinkled faces, and we're making eye contact with each other without saying a word, just acknowledging, like, we survived. We're here. We're here. We're still
that's
here.
Right. And, oh, that's true.
Yeah. Now, granted,
that's true.
We wrapped up the dancing before midnight, but we were having a good time out there.
We're doing our own farewell on December 7th.
And what's that about? Tell people about that.
So what that's about, I mean, when you think about it, I mean, I have been in that building. Girl Bar was in that building from 1990 until I sold it in 2010 to buy the Bourbon Pub and Parade, which is also another iconic gay men's bar here in New Orleans, which, by the way, opened the same year that Studio One opened in 1974. The Bourbon Pub and Parade here in New Orleans opened in 1974. So that was an interesting, and that was the first gay bar I ever went to, because I went to school here in 1979, and I came out basically here in New Orleans while I was in college with my college roommate. Isn't that a cliche? The Bourbon Pub and Parade was the first bar I ever stepped into, gay bar I ever stepped into, and then 20 years later, I owned it. So that was kind of crazy. But going back to the other gay bar that I owned in Los Angeles, I became, so we started Girl Bar in 1990, quick chronologically. In 93, Scott Forbes sold the bar, and I became the general manager. And I was the general manager of the bar from 93 till 99, when I then took it over, and we did a almost $2 million renovation and made it the factory and an Ultra Suede. And, you know, I had a Girl Bar continued on there, as well as other, you know, other gay promotions. And then, you know, as the years went on and gay bars were not becoming quite as popular, gay kid, you know, the younger crowd were going to straight bars and whatever, you know, we had to do the same thing. We had to start bringing in other crowds, like straight, you know, straight crowds and, you know, just different demographics to keep the business going. And then I sold it in 2010. So now the building is coming down in January. So we're doing a last hurrah. I mean, it's where Girl Bar effectively started. And we had, you know, many, many years. You used to come to the factory.
I did. I've done every generation in that bar.
I know. Well, and the reason we called it the factory was because back in the 60s, the Rat Pack actually, you know, had that space. And they called it the factory.
And that's Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., that Rat Pack.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, it's that building has quite the history.
Yeah, it's amazing that it's coming down. It's going to be reassembled, but it'll never be what it was.
Yeah.
It'll never be what it was. Yeah. And the reality is that young people today, I mean, this is the challenge, I think, for LGBT people, is we fought for the right to equality. So now here, I mean, we're getting there. Not completely there, but we're getting there. And now a lot of young LGBT people are assimilated fully with their straight peers. Don't think twice about hanging out with their straight allies and straight friends, and are very much immersed into the broader culture, which is what we were fighting for. But at the same time, they're not patronizing those unique LGBT spaces, whether it's bookstores or coffee shops or bars. And so their business model is under threat.
And conversely, I have to tell you, what's interesting, like for me, for instance, here in New Orleans, I get gaggles of straight people on the weekend. I mean, you know, and straight women who, you know, come and do their, you know, bridesmaids showers and, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. And they don't mind being in a gay bar. They love being in a gay bar.
Right.
You know, where before people, you know, wouldn't step in a gay bar. And now, you know, on any given weekend, you know, probably a third of the crowd is straight.
Wow, that's amazing. Every now and then I get the people will say, Mayor, do something about all the straight people in the gay bars. Kick them out. And my response is always the same.
Yeah.
Those who demand equality must extend it. Oh, who are you quoting? As I'm quoting John Durant. I made that up. It's true. If you're going to demand equality, you got to extend it at the same time.
Yeah, put that one in the books.
It's amazing, Sandy. I mean,
So December 7th. So I hope everybody in LA, you'll come and say goodbye with us. We've got a great lineup. You know, all of our old DJs. Jeffrey Sanker is flying up from Puerto Vallarta.
I love Jeffrey.
I'm flying in from Fort Lauderdale, and we've got Chad Hudson and Manny Lehman and Kimberly S. and all the old crew. Everybody's coming back. You know, to just get together for that one last dance in the building.
And yours truly, I will be there celebrating the end
Good.
Of Factory
so
Access
glad.
And Girl Bar. I'll be there celebrating with all of you. So is there a website where they can get people can get tickets?
I think Chad Hudson Events.
All right, ChadHudsonEvents.com.
Chad Hudson Events, yeah. We've got an Eventbrite where you can pick up tickets. We already we had an early bird special for a cheap price, and we sold out within 2 days.
Wow, it's
going to
be packed.
So now we've moved up to the next tier, so tickets are still available, but it's going to be an action pack. So what we're doing, too, is like what we used to do back in the factory days, is that the guys are going to be on one side, on the factory side, and Girl Bar is actually going to be doing what was, you know, Ultra Suede. And then at 12:30, 1 o'clock, we're going to open the doors. You know, there's the double doors that separate the two clubs. You've got the two separate entrances. So we're going to have the girls on one side. We're going to have the boys on the other side, and you know, whoever else wants to come. And then at, 12:30, we're going to open up the double doors, and everybody's just going to mix.
I can hardly wait. That's going to be phenomenal.
So it's going to be great. We're really excited.
Sandy, thanks for coming on. Thanks for doing the show. Hope to have you and Robin together on some other time. That would be fantastic.
Absolutely, we'd love to. All right. I mean, we've got 30 years of talk. Hard to fill that in 8 minutes.
All right. See you December 7th, gang. When we come back, we'll be talking to the MCC clergy about what to be thankful for this Thanksgiving here on Channel Q.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
That's Thankful, Kelly Clarkson singing Thankful, and we are now going to talk about thankful and gratitude, and we're joined by two of my favorite people, two of our most reverend and revered people from the MCC churches, Keith Mozingo and Lucha Chappelle. Welcome, guys.
Well, hello.
Hello, hello.
Welcome back. You've been here a few times, and I appreciate you coming back. We are coming up on Thanksgiving, and so before you all got here, we had Daryl Cummings here from the LGBT Center talking about homelessness in the LGBT community and what that's about. And then we had Sandy Sachs, who was on talking about the history of Girl Bar, which she started 30 years ago, which was an alternative presentation of lipstick lesbianism, which was considered radical back in 1989, that lesbians would wear lipstick. It was radical. And now here we are with the two of you. And I guess we'll talk, you know, about, well, you both have to give sermons next week about Thanksgiving. So I'm sure you've been prepping your notes about what you're going to say. So.
Well, yeah, of course. Well, we're doing thankful, grateful, blessed throughout the whole month. That's been our theme for the month of November, because, you know, you can't wrap it all up in one day.
Right.
We really do want to make sure that people realize it's not just a one-day event, that we really do have to count our blessings all the time.
Yep.
And so we have some plans coming up for Thanksgiving Day itself, but we are working on messages. Lucia's been prodding me all the way over here on the drive about...
What are you going to do?
That's right. How are we going to do this? What are we going to say about that? So, yeah, we're trying to work in... We're even working in the World AIDS Day and Advent. I mean, 'tis the season. It's like... It piles up, the last 2 months of the year. Comes. Yeah.
Well, it's true. Thanksgiving is right up against World AIDS Day this year. Like, they're back to back.
Yes.
Back to back.
Yes.
I would suggest that this, and Jason, as our young millennial, I hope you join the conversation, okay?
I'm here.
I would suggest that this is a very dark period of our history, our entire country. And so I think for a lot of people, the idea of looking for things to be grateful for or to be happy about, maybe it presents as a challenge. And what would you say about that, Lucia?
Well, you know, I think that in a way it's making it too hard and too simple at the same time. It's too hard to sit around and try and think up a list of, I'm happy about this, I'm glad about this, I'm happy about this. If you, however, are able to connect with a sense of life, I mean, we're alive. Mm-hmm. We're alive. Mm-hmm. And if we can look at it that way, instead of looking for a list, looking for the overall fact that we're here, and we can fight.
Mm-hmm. Another
and
day.
And we can win.
And we have before.
And we have before.
Yeah.
You know, that's really...
Amen.
I'm not so sure I'm happy we got you a sound effect board. you do that, and I'm never expecting it, and I'm like startled.
That's the point of it.
I know. I'm startled out of my chair every time.
Go with the flow.
But what Lucia is saying is correct. Even if you're feeling pain, It's a reminder that you are alive.
Yes.
That you have life, mm-hmm. and that, you know, well, I did something to get this, so it didn't just happen because I'm sitting here.
Right, right.
Right, so I was able to get up, and I was able to move. I was visiting back in Baton Rouge, where I was the last 11 and a half years before I came here a year and a half ago, pastoring, and I went out to visit Reverend Elder Rochelle Brown, who was our last moderator, interim moderator for several years. And she has built a house. She inherited 20 acres of land out in the middle of Louisiana. I mean, like, not in a town, out from the city. And I drove out there, and we walked. We walked a lot of those acres that day, I will tell you that. We walked, and she showed me the crawfish pond, and she showed me where the animals live, and the wood ducks are, you know, on this little pond and all this stuff. And we walked and walked, and she said, you know, I said, you've done an amazing, she just built a house out there, so I went to see the house. And she said, you know, it's so peaceful out here. It's so wonderful to be out here and be with nature and to see all of this. And she said, and I've done a whole lot of work, and I'm, you know, I'm feeling my age and I'm feeling the aches, but it just reminds me that I'm alive. And I thought, oh, yes, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So maybe I won't complain so much the next time I have an old age ache.
And when we talk about life, you know, we may think, oh, well, we're alive, we're here on Earth, that's good. But we also have to think that when we have life, there's purpose that comes with it.
There you go.
And that we can do whatever we set our minds to and try to accomplish it with our life.
Oh, you see, millennial? Now, if I had a soundboard, I would be amen. I would hit the amen button for you.
That's just what I think of when I hear life. You know?
Yeah. No, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. It's direction.
Right.
And, you know, people, oh, I don't want direction. Yeah, sure you do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I know people that are sitting around waiting for life.
Right.
They're really waiting for
right.
To figure out,
don't,
you know,
wait.
Waiting for it to come and sit in their lap kind of thing. Yeah. Oh, here I am.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I tell people, the game is in play. No. The game is in play.
You got to get out.
Life is in play. It's not like something to reflect upon. It's actually happening day to day. Get in there.
Yeah. Make it happen.
Yeah. When we come back, gang, we'll be talking more about what we're all grateful for as LGBT people. Thanks for tuning in here on Channel Q. Okay, my young millennial, I will give you a dollar if you can tell me who just sang that incredible song.
I don't know.
That's Sly and the Family Stone.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Okay, thankful by Sly and the Family Stone. Reverends A and B. Lucia and Keith. I think for a lot of LGBT people, the start of the holidays is always tough because some of them are separated from traditional biological families. Some of them may feel alienation. Maybe there's a broken heart or a broken relationship that's occurred recently. I mean, all the holidays bring up all sorts of heavy emotions, I think, for people. What do you counsel or pastor people? What do you say if someone's walking in this period of time feeling a bit blue?
Well, you know, for one thing, I think that traditions and rituals really are important. So we need to build our own. We need to treat ourselves with the, you know, the medicine that comes from, you know, the thing that broke our heart. You know that old saying, the way they used to mix medicine? Okay. You take some of what made you sick.
Oh, yeah. A bit of the tail of the dog that bit you.
There you go. Something like that.
Don't look at me, like Jason, that. Like that. I don't know the exact expression. It's some baby boomer thing. Trust me.
Oh, it's older than
older than baby boomers. Okay. A tip of the tail of the dog that bit you. That's it.
But if we have new ways of celebrating and new ways of expressing what our families are now, our friend connections, you know, the communities that we have now, and have ways of celebrating that, you know, to fill up that hole, fill up that gap.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're doing this Thanksgiving?
That's what I always do.
Okay.
I'm always inventing some new kind of hocus pocus.
I love that.
And then she drags the rest of us into it. That's the deal.
And but they're all
good.
Willing.
It's good. We are. Well, it's always good. It's always good. I was telling you, I mean, she's saying it right. I'm from the East Coast. Most of my family has died. I've outlived most of them. I have some cousins that are alive, and yes, it would be great to go back home and see them. But they, you know, they all have their own family units, and I don't quite fit in because my parents are gone and my grandparents are gone, so I don't quite fit in. And so I've always depended on the church. The church has been my chosen family. And so, you know, we try to do something at the church on Thanksgiving Day, on those holidays where people are feeling lonely. It also is a trigger for those people that have addictions. And I think it's always important that we keep the church open for those meetings to keep going. We have over 30 groups that meet in our building. And I think it's important that those groups know, sometimes they'll ask us, can we meet on Christmas Day? Is it okay? And we're of course, you can meet 365 every day. We want you to meet every day.
Right.
Because whatever triggers that, we want to make sure depression a lot of times comes with the holidays for whatever reason. Sometimes I don't even really feel like I have a reason to be depressed, but it's just kind of you feel blue with the holidays. It's a sweetness that comes with the holidays. I love hearing I'm one that's, you know, it doesn't bother me that the Christmas music has started already.
Yeah. You love all of it.
I've had my Christmas tree up already.
Before
Halloween. It's all good. Well, but here's the other piece of that. You know, some people say, well, why would you do that? It's because I'm away so much as a minister. There are so many other activities that I have to be involved with. If I wait until December to start, it'll never get done. Yeah. I don't have time then to stop and do everything.
Right, yeah.
And I don't even have time to enjoy it, even if I do put it up, because I'm always out.
Yeah.
So I have to start early. So it doesn't bother me, you know. We have really reached the bottom of the barrel of complaints if we're complaining about when people listen to music and put their Christmas tree up, for heaven's sake.
I always love the religious right with their battle cry this time of year, putting the Christ back in Christmas. It's like, I don't think it ever was taken out.
I don't remember that.
I think Christmas pretty much gets attention all through October, November, and December.
For real?
Yeah.
What are they saying?
I don't know what they're saying.
You can say Merry Christmas again.
It's like, really? I had never stopped, actually.
I didn't think you couldn't do that.
Jason, what do you do? Because I know you're Muslim, but you celebrate all these holidays and something.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I do Christmas. We do Christmas as a family because it's fun. It's the culture. It's just a good time, you know? And Thanksgiving, of course, is no different. I mean, bringing family together is something very special. And same thing with Christmas, too, you know? It's all about family gatherings, love, all of that good stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'm like Keith Mazingo over here. I just go overkill because I've got my Christmas tree. I've got my manger scene. I've got my...
Already out?
No, not yet, but I'm about to. I've got my Hanukkah menorahs, two that are coming out. Woo! One electric, one brass. I've got my Kwanzaa doll. Dolls, all seven Kwanzaa dolls that I'm going to put out. Wow. I like completely go for it.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Because it's a very raw emotional time because I start to miss people who aren't here. Family members who passed or friends who passed. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about them. And all of a sudden, I'm stuck in another period of time. And I'm getting blue and I'm getting sad. And then I miss them. And then I have to convert that into I love them. I miss them because I love them so much. And then it's okay. It's like, I still love them, and they still love me, wherever they are.
We have to discern what is, I'm feeling blue, I'm being triggered for an addiction, I'm depressed, which is the extreme. But what you're saying, sometimes we just wax nostalgic.
Yes.
And it takes us to a different place and a different time that can never be.
Right.
So there's just a hint, while it's love, you obviously loved that and you like the memories of that, but then you also remember you can't go back and you have to do something new.
Right.
And you have to honor the past, but don't get stuck there.
Mm-hmm. I have, this is going to sound really corny, I have these teddy bears. When my friends were sick and dying of AIDS in the hospital, often they were given teddy bears while they were there. And then when they would pass, the surviving parents or partner would say, do you want his teddy bear? started with one teddy bear. Now I have like 20 teddy bears. And every Christmas, those 20 teddy bears go under the Christmas tree. Now, you might think, is that really healthy, John? You know, it's very raw. It's very emotional. Yeah. But like you say, I am touching the past.
I love that.
I'm still in the present and moving forward to the future. Oh, my God. Jarryd Hill has just walked in the studio.
I was trying to sneak in because I didn't
Say
anything or not.
You brought your meal. Do you, Reverend Keith Mazingo, Reverend Lucia Chappelle over here from the MCC Churches, and of course Jason Y, our producer.
Yes.
Jarryd, we're talking about what we're all going to be doing for the holidays. I don't know if you're ready to chime in about what you're doing for Thanksgiving and Christmas.
My dad gave me the call yesterday morning, like, so, are you coming for the holidays? Or I was like, oh, I don't actually think I'm going to be able to do it this year. And he was like, oh, okay. Ooh. And I was like, but I can call you back. I'm not sure because I'm trying to get out the door. It was awkward. But yeah, I don't. I generally enjoy, like, on an ideal year, I love doing Friendsgiving.
Right.
And then Christmas with family.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wait, is your family here in Los Angeles or
my
somewhere?
My family's in the Bay Area.
Ah, okay.
So they're a little bit further away, but it's not too far. But, like, just with work and everything this year, it just doesn't really work out to be able to go home.
Yeah.
And my mom just moved out of state this week. And so it's, like, it's a whole different thing this year. So I don't know.
So what are you going to do for Christmas?
I don't know yet. I have a trip to go on the day after Christmas from here, so it's like going out of town would be weird. I don't know. It's still very up in the air for me for it to only be a week away for Thanksgiving, and then Christmas is like right after. So
yeah.
Do you set up a tree?
I set up a tree last year for the first time because the guy I was dating really loved Christmas, but we're not together anymore, so it's a little bit triggering. We'll see.
Are you associating Christmas trees with your past boyfriend?
A little bit. At least that one. Because it's a fake tree, and like, so it's still in my closet somewhere, and I'm like, this will be fun.
It's a fake tree just like he was.
Wow. I don't hate him. We're good. We're friendly. I might give it to him because I don't know that I
need
it.
Yeah.
Well, who hasn't had their heart broken around the holidays, right? That's the whole Michael, what's his name, song. Last Christmas I gave you my heart. The very next day, you threw it away.
There you go. Thanks for that, John.
You're welcome.
Thanks. I'm going to take that with me for the rest of the day.
It's very therapeutic to go ahead and set it up anyway.
I think I should give it to him.
Just past experience. Well, you can do that, but you still need to decorate some for Christmas for yourself. Yeah. Even if it's in a small way.
Yeah, every year I always say I'm going to decorate for Christmas, but then I never ended up doing it. So then last year when I did it, I was like, oh, look at me, I decorated for Christmas. So we'll see. I probably will do it this year.
When we come back, we'll be listening to Jarryd Hill and whether he celebrates Kwanzaa or not, because I'm curious about that.
Yeah.
I do.
Okay.
I do.
Nice.
I'm 12% black, you know. I told you that last week.
I'm 81% black. So,
All right. Gang, we'll be right back. Welcome back, gang. We are in studio with an incredible group of people. The Reverend Lucia Chappelle from the MCC Churches, the Reverend Keith Mazingo from the MCC Churches, Jarryd Hill, who's coming up next, and of course, Jason Y, behind the boards, and me. And we're talking about the upcoming holidays, traditions, what makes us blue and what makes us happy. And before the break, we talked about Kwanzaa, because Kwanzaa's coming up, too.
Yeah.
That is basically, I think... An African traditional holiday about the seasons and about the periods of life that have been incorporated into the holidays.
Yeah.
And I know that Hanukkah actually was not historically in the month of December, but the Jewish community, feeling left out, kind of threw Hanukkah into December to try to get it there. But I also know that the Christians, that the birth of Jesus was probably in April, not in December, but they threw it into December because of the pagan winter solstice. So it seems like all cultures just kind of decide to toss it in to December.
It's a good time for a holiday, you know, the nights are long, it's cold, you know, all of that kind of stuff. You need to have something that associated with fire and light and candles, and so there you have it.
I never thought
Kwanzaa
about it like
was actually not a traditional African holiday.
Oh, I didn't
it was
know that.
Invented here.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Maulani Ronkawenga.
Created it here in the States?
Yes,
I thought it was an ancient African.
Still, I think, currently a professor at Long Beach, Cal State Long Beach.
Yeah, it's not an old tradition.
But no. It was.
Are you Googling it, Chair? Good for you if
no,
you are.
No, I'm not Googling. I totally know all these things already.
No, you do not. You do not.
Absolutely you know not. That. It was founded by Maulana Karenga and was first celebrated in 1966 through 1967. I completely know that he's 78 years old and is currently an author and a scholar, and his wife's name is Brenda. I knew that. Well, his ex-wife, apparently.
All right,
thank
well,
you, Wikipedia.
Yeah. We're all learning something. But I mean, I guess here's the point, though. I mean, you bring up a really good point. That the historically pagan people or ancient people, in the coldest part of winter, sought the hearth of the fire to stay warm, to survive
there you go.
Into the spring. Mm-hmm. And so all of these cultures and traditions have placed themselves into that same pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's a good way to look at it, finding the light in the middle of the winter. Huh?
Yeah. I feel like that's an I never thought about the end of the year being such a good time for holidays in this way. I never thought about it from the fire and the darkness and the mm-hmm. long nights kind of thing. That's a really interesting perspective on the holiday season.
Yeah. Well, it's the winter equinox, right? Well, equinox is not just a gym.
It's not just a gym.
It means something.
It's interesting because I always, whenever, June 21st or 22nd is summer solstice and mm-hmm. it begins, and I always think of it as like the slow decline into the holidays because like the days start getting shorter. And I don't know why, but I've always thought of it that way. And like summer is always like the march toward the holidays in my mind. So
right. Yeah. All right. Favorite holiday show, movie, something that you've got to watch.
Okay. When I was a kid, I used to come home and watch Home Alone every day. Like Home Alone with Macaulay Culkin. It's a Christmas movie, but I could watch it all year round. I just found out Disney Plus has it, so it's about to be a good holiday season. So I love that movie.
Reverend Keith, which is the one you're going to watch for sure?
Well, every year I have to watch Rudolph. I just have to.
With Burl Ives.
Yes.
The Claymation.
I still love it.
Does that date back to being a child for you? Like it was nostalgic for you?
When I was a child. And you know, I thought it was the greatest thing. All of the, and it's you look at it now and think, I really thought that was great. But my mom even bought the record album of Burl Ives' song, all of
Have
the
a
songs.
Holly Jolly Christmas.
Oh, yeah. It was amazing. And loving his voice. I still love his voice for all these years.
That's awesome.
Reverend Lucia, is there a favorite? Holly?
Absolutely.
Which one?
1951 Christmas Carol with Alistair Sim.
Oh.
Absolutely.
The ghost of Christmas past, present, and future.
The classic movie.
I love the Ebenezer Scrooge story. Mm-hmm. Love it.
That's
Jason?
Also, if we don't have one.
Yeah.
I don't. But I'm just
Jason.
Well, I'm just the kind of guy that will just go on Netflix every year,
dude,
see what's popping.
Love
and
Actually.
Then watch it,
love,
and then get in the mood for it.
Have you heard of it?
I can see that.
Yeah.
Love Actually. Have you heard of it?
No.
Okay, you need to watch Love Actually.
Okay, what's it about?
Is that your favorite?
That's my favorite Christmas
song. Okay,
It's about all these different people, and they're coming into the holidays, and their lives are chaotic and full of stress and scattered every which way, and then they ultimately get to the whole point of the holiday, which is love.
Listen, this wouldn't be a gay radio station if I didn't shout out. You mentioned A Christmas Carol, Irvin Lucia. Vanessa Williams did a remake of that movie called A Diva's Christmas Carol.
Mm.
And let me tell you, it is some classic television movie.
Does Vanessa play Ebenezer's character?
Well, her name isn't Ebenezer. Her name is, I don't want to mess this up, but she plays like the title character. She plays the lead character, and she is a nightmare. She's a bit of a terror.
Love that.
Yeah, no, she's fantastic, and it's just delicious.
And of course, you know what I love the best is the Ghost of Christmas Present when he lifts up his red skirt. The two little children clinging to his legs represent ignorance
and want.
Yeah, ignorance and want. That's Charles Dickens. Right?
Her name in the movie is Ebony Scrooge.
Ebony.
Ebony.
Yes, that's right. I remember now.
She's a singer. She's a singer, and she is a nightmare.
Ebony Scrooge.
But she's fantastic in the movie. So I'm a black gay man. I do love me a Vanessa Williams movie. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jason, come January, you're going to come back and report to us what your favorite holiday movie. You got to have one.
That's tough, though,
we'll
Jason.
We'll make you a playlist.
Because everyone told me that I have to watch Hocus Pocus because I had never seen
seen it.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, I never saw it. And they were like, you've never seen Hocus Pocus? But I think that was one of those things that I had to have seen back in the day, because I started watching it, and then 25 minutes in, I woke up realizing I'd fallen asleep.
Oh,
and, like,
no.
Turned it off. It didn't hit for me as an adult. Like,
yeah,
I never saw it.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Miracle on 34th Street, Jason. You know this one?
That's a good Christmas movie.
I'm going to have to write these down.
Oh, my God. I am texting you over the holidays when we're on station break.
Yeah,
you need to watch some of these.
You have to get the black and white.
Not colorized.
Not colorized.
Yes.
Got it.
Okay. And the very ultimate gay Christmas movie, Anti-Mame.
Anti-Mame?
Write that down. Anti-Mame. You've never seen Anti-Mame,
no,
Jared?
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, my God. I am having a heart attack.
I am so sorry. This baby boomer is about to die.
Okay, boomer.
We talked about that earlier. Okay, boomer. Anti-Mame, 1957, 59, Rosalind Russell plays this eccentric gay aunt who's got her nephew, who she's now taken over because his dad died.
Okay.
And she is the most chaotic, wild, loving, eccentric character, and they show lesbians and they show gay men and they talk about free sex. This is 1957 or 58.
Anti-Mame, A-M.
Okay, not with Lucille Ball. Do not see the Lucille Ball version. It'll kill you. You'll fall asleep. Lucille Ball is horrible.
The black and white version.
Yeah. Anti-Mame with Rosalind Russell.
I'm going to have to buy that, it because it's not on any streaming service, John.
Oh, my God. Okay, boomer.
If you don't like it, let us know. We'll pay for it.
I'm going to rent it for $2.99, and I will be looking for my money.
I will buy you $2.99. I guarantee you. You're going to love. This is a favorite Christmas holiday show for me every year.
Okay, Auntie so, Mame. Justin, you've got Anti-Mame, A Diva's Christmas Carol.
Yes.
Miracle on 34th Street.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Claymations.
I am going to. I am,
don't worry.
Love Actually. And Love Actually. Yes.
And Love Actually.
Love Actually, which all of those are imperative. Imperative must see.
I'm going to have a whole month full of Christmas movies now.
There you go.
All right, gang. When we come back, we'll talk about the true meaning of the holidays and get off of television, okay? Thanks for tuning in here on Channel Q. Welcome back, gang. We're in the closing part of our show, and I'm here with Reverend Lucia Chappelle from the MCC Church, Reverend Keith Mozingo from the MCC Church, Jared Hill, who's coming up next on his show, and Jason Y behind the boards, and we're talking about the holidays, and I guess at the end of the day, after all the TV specials, after all the shopping, after all the traditions, after all the food, after all the celebration, ultimately it must come down to something for each of us, I'm guessing, this holiday period, so... Lucia, what would you boil it all down to at the end of the day?
A bang up end and a great beginning. You know, we're about to go around the cycle again, so give it a bang up end and get ready for a great beginning.
2020, big year.
Wow.
Big year, whole lot of big stuff on the agenda. Yeah. I know. Right? It's almost overwhelming to think about.
It is.
Yep.
Reverend, I think she hit the nail on the head. You know, we have this time of recentering about being thankful for things. And like I told you before, we do it the whole month at church. That is the theme for the whole month of November. And then we go into Advent. And for the Christian church, Advent is the beginning. You know, it's the start of a new year. So it's kind of like you start the new year in December. Mm-hmm. You start the new church year in December. And so for me, it's like you get through the holidays. And this is no lie. This is honest confession of the Christian church pastor.
Uh-oh.
I'm just telling you that as soon as Christmas Eve service is over, Keith is out. I need like a week.
So leave me alone.
Just do not. Don't call me. Don't email me. You know, Jesus is finally here. Y'all go concentrate on him. Y'all go over there and worship him.
Like, Lord, I don't want to learn any lessons in the next week. Don't teach me nothing.
I am out. I am through.
I love it.
They're like, are we having a watch night service? I'm like, oh, no, hell no. No, absolutely not.
I love that. I love
go so party. Much. There are bars open. there are parties going on.
He said, I'm
going
to be watching at home for watching.
Watch the ball drop. Exactly. Watch the ball drop.
I love that.
Oh, dear mercy me.
There we go. There it goes. Jared, what's it boil down to for you?
I've been trying to really embrace, like, thinking about gratitude every day and, like, trying to find something, the things that I'm grateful for every morning. And so I have a different appreciation for gratitude. Like, it's growing and finding it more importance for me every day. And so I love that there's a period of time where, you know, more people are focused on gratitude and being thankful for, you know, life or whatever it is that they're grateful for. So that's been really fantastic to me for the holidays. I'm excited about that. And I kind of love getting to talk to people about what they're grateful for, because in a time where things are so dark and so frustrating for a lot of people and confusing and hectic and all that, like, there's so much positivity and warmth in having a conversation with someone about what they're grateful for. So I really, really love that.
Jason, why? You want to chime in on all this?
About?
The holidays. Oh, they don't mean anything to you. You haven't seen any of the specials.
I mean, the holidays, like I said, they're a great time for a family to come together, right? This is what it's all about. It's all about love, friendship, family, all of that good stuff. It's about, you know, wrapping up the year as well for you, you know, reminiscing on what you did and thinking about how you can improve yourself for the next year to come.
Yeah.
You know?
So my two cents on all this, from Thanksgiving to Christmas Eve, I feel like I am going 120 miles per hour. Yes. Like, you know, I'm shopping, yes. I'm buying gifts, I'm mailing stuff, putting up trees, putting up Hanukkah menorahs, you know, running around, got Christmas Eve service, got this, see my family, Christmas tamales, and then Christmas morning.
Wait, Christmas tamales?
Tamales are the best.
Are you bringing some?
I will bring some for you. They're the best.
I'm in love with you. Sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
And then Christmas morning comes, and in West Hollywood, almost everybody has left and gone somewhere else.
Oh.
City of West Hollywood is so quiet, you will not see a car go by for minutes at a time.
That's a nice change of pace.
So quiet. And that is my favorite part, because that's the moment I just sit there and just think.
Yeah.
And let it all go, like you say, in preparation for the new year. So it's in the quiet moments mm-hmm. of the holidays that I find the most meaning. I think that's kind of common here for all of us. Like,
absolutely.
Big release.
There's nothing better than just a good quiet night, like a quiet day or something.
Silent night.
Absolutely.
Oh, there you go.
I see what you did there. You see what I did there? That's a song.
That is a song. Author unknown, actually.
You're such an encyclopedia.
I am the... Oh, thank you, Jason. Wow, Jason.
What? The Muslim knows the song.
The Muslim straight guy knows the song. The Muslim and he can sing. That's amazing. There he is with the rim shot and all. I will bring you Christmas tamales.
I'm holding you to that, John.
Yeah, I will bring you. It's a great Mexican tradition, Christmas tamales.
I am so happy right now. What am I grateful for? Christmas tamales.
So great. Favorite food of the season? Anybody else before we wrap up today?
Gosh, there's so many. I love me some turkey, though. I gotta say.
That's really? Up.
I go off of my vegetarian thing, and I dive into some turkey.
I find turkey a little dry, in my opinion. I prefer, like, chicken more. You know, like...
Depends on how it's cooked.
You cannot do chicken on Thanksgiving Day, Jason.
I love chicken.
I don't care. Oh. It's Thanksgiving. You need to have turkey.
That juicy white meat chicken coming out of the oven? I mean, there's
nothing... See, I'm a dark meat chicken person.
Oh, you're a dark meat.
Yeah, because I feel like that's a whole other conversation.
Oh, my God. Did we not...
The darker the berry.
Oh,
the darker the berry, ooh, the stronger the beer, the sweeter the juice.
The darker the chicken, the more flavorful it is. It's for me. Like, it's just so good.
That's true.
But you're asking favorite foods, and for me, it's like a pairing of all these things that I love. Like, I love macaroni and cheese with yams, with ham, and with dressing or stuffing, or some people call it stuffing filling or whatever. Those things together are the holidays for me. And I will eat them all week long.
It's got to be eggnog for me.
Eggnog, just, of course.
I love this time of year to get the eggnog. I've already had some.
He's having it now.
Gary has his Christmas tree up. Of course he's going to have the eggnog.
Of course he's got his eggnog.
Point taken.
God, my God. Gang, we're out. Everyone have a great Thanksgiving. We'll see you back. We'll be back December the 6th. Have a great holiday. Thank you, Reverend Keith, Reverend Lucia, for coming on
the
show.
Thank you for having
Jared, us. Jared, thanks for joining the conversation, as always. And we'll see you all in 2 weeks. Thanks for tuning in on Channel Q.